My name is Dario Hasenstab. I'm here with Balder Hagratz, and we are back with the Western Bubble podcast. Today, we're talking about the 2024 European Parliament election. Hi, Balder. Why are we talking about this topic today, one day after the European Parliament elections? Why are we talking about them?
Well, essentially because it is very much a sign of the state of the West, what happens in these parliamentary elections, what happens in these parliamentary elections, right? The populist right has made very significant gains, depending on which country you look at. In general, populism is clearly gaining ground. Now, we have to take into account that these are European elections and not national elections, and there are some differences there, but it is one more sign of many, many signs from the past 20 years or so that we are moving towards a, if you like, post-liberal, post-democratic society. And that is something that should concern us, and that is very much in line with our overall thesis in this podcast series, namely that there is a Western bubble of arrogance and misplaced self-belief about who we are. But at the same time, there's a decay in our societies that is happening right in front of our eyes. And therefore, it's useful to analyze this.
And what are the facts?
The 2024 European Parliament election took place from June 6th until June 9th. About 357 million people were eligible to vote in 27 countries. It was the 10th parliamentary election since the first direct elections in 1979 and the first European Parliament election after Brexit. In the previous election, held in 2019, in terms of the political groups in the parliament, they resulted in the Conservative EPP group and the centre-left SND suffering significant losses, while the liberal centrist Renew faction, the Green faction, and the Eurosceptic Identity and Democracy faction made substantial gains. This year, the results showed a clear shift to the right, with hard right groups adding seats and the center-right European People's Party gaining. By contrast, the Greens lost notably in Germany, and the liberal Renew Europe also shrunk as Marine Le Pen's Rassemblement National took away a lot of seats from the Renaissance Party of French President Emmanuel Macron, prompting him to call a snap parliamentary election.
What is the bubble?
So, yesterday was quite a surprisingly emotional day, right? Because we expected there to be a general shift towards the right. I mean, we've seen that in the past 5 years, but then the extent of which basically the right won, that was a little bit surprising.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's painful to see more than anything. It's not that surprising because European parliamentary elections are absolutely the place where voters go to protest in their most, if you like, violent ways, right? It doesn't seem to be the most particularly relevant to them, the European Parliament. People don't really have a direct personal connection with the EU in that sense. And therefore, this is a vote where they can show their displeasure, their anger with the establishment. And in that sense, it's not completely surprising that they use this moment to actually essentially shout at the powers that be and right, say, we want something else. We're not happy with how things are going. But it's painful to see because, yes, it's another step towards a society very far away from the, if you like, utopia that 25 years ago we thought we were going to establish in the West.
I mean, right, one of the reasons why the European elections are usually just an opportunity to be mad at the establishment is because, I mean, the European Parliament has very little influence over European politics in that sense, right? The Parliament does not hold an initiation right where they get to initiate policy. They can just reject policy in that sense. And I mean, we also saw this with the voter turnout, right? Where we're talking about 50% more or less, I mean, across different European states, it varies. But people, I mean, it was a nice and sunny day yesterday, we should add, because at least the German commentary said that in Italy, people were spending the day at the beach instead of at the polls, right? Maybe playing a little bit on stereotypes here, but overall, there was a low voter turnout.
Interestingly, here in Spain, here in Madrid at least, it was raining all day long. I think that yes, this is the cheapest protest vote that you can have. People sometimes misunderestimate these right-wing populist movements, right? You've got a hardcore populist movement where like 10, 20, 30% will always vote for the party. But then you've got a lot of people who don't particularly like the right-wing party, the extreme right-wing parties, but they like the establishment even less. And therefore, whenever they can, they will, to show their displeasure, they vote for that right-wing party. However, when it comes to national elections, then all of a sudden the stakes are higher. And that group of sort of undecided voters then often turn towards the familiar, towards the safe bet of the centrist establishment parties, because that at least seems less risky, right? So in that sense, voting right-wing extremism in European elections seems like the least risky option to show your displeasure.
And it's also not a surprise after the last 5 years that we've been through. I mean, we had a pandemic, then there's a war, then there is inflation as a result of the war and the pandemic and so on. I mean, lives of the average European look very different from 5 years ago, when the main focus of the elections was global warming, actually, right? It was an election where Green parties won big, even the Conservatives woke up, and then we had the European Green New Deal as a result. And it almost feels like the 2019 elections were very much a vote on, okay, where are we going to take Europe, right? This is exciting, where are we going to take it? The Brits are finally gone, right? With a bit of a wink and an eye. Okay, let's see where we can take this project. And then 5 years later, with climate change not being the topic at the center of attention anymore, and Europe very much being scared from outsiders, from the evil Russians, from the evil immigrants, from the evil inflation, it seems like they turn towards the right because we're a bit more scared of the world.
Yes, there is a real practical, rational analysis that goes along the lines of life is getting worse, and it's difficult to put your finger at exactly how or why, because, for example, employment is relatively high in Europe. GDP keeps on growing, but as we've discussed in the past, GDP growth is meaningless if you don't do anything productive with it. The sense is justified in the way that middle classes and working classes see that their life is more of a struggle than it used to be. I see this on a daily basis with students graduating. You graduated a few years ago, but I remember as a student graduating in the 90s, and there was no worry. We would be fine. Of course, life would be good. Of course, things would go well. The 21st century was going to be brilliant. And now students graduating from university this year, last year, the year before, are incredibly worried, not just about whether they find a job, but whether they can actually pay their rent, whether they somehow will find happiness. There is a real sense of urgency in the way that our societies do not seem to cover the needs of the middle classes and the working classes. And there we have to very critically look at the establishment. Instead of just ranting about the extreme right, we have to say, hey, establishment, you've terribly dropped the ball over the past 25 years. You've let these problems fester, and now people are just angry with you, and rightfully so.
Thank you for bringing up the youth and my generation, because 5 years ago, I remember, right, this roar going through Europe, right? It was the time of Fridays for Future, and the youth was out on the streets protesting for climate policy. And this time, with these elections, the youth voted completely the opposite of what they voted 5 years ago. Now they actually also vote on the right wing. And I mean, you mentioned inflation and basically a lack of maybe opportunities, or at least a perceived lack of opportunities. Because I never knew what inflation was, right? I knew it was an economic concept and things get more expensive. And for some reason, we have to have 2% of inflation. No one was ever really able to explain that to me. It's okay. It's all fine. Okay. I didn't never really felt it. But compared to 3 years ago, things are now somewhere between 15 and 20% more expensive. And that's something that now for the first time in my life, I can actually feel. And I'm fine. I have a comfortable salary. But the lower, like, so the working and lower middle class families who basically have had stagnating salaries for the last 5 years, or maybe they were only adjusted a little bit, they are really feeling it. People are really struggling compared to five years ago.
Yes, and in many ways, this is hidden. That struggle is hidden by the macro data that exists when it comes to employment and all that, right? In many ways, there is still this sense among the establishment that it is all purely emotional and that there's no rational concern. But the concerns are rational. You talk to people in the street, talk to students who, you know, at the university where I teach, these are generally well-off students. You're very familiar with it. And it should be people that look towards the future and are excited to start their career and to prosper. And instead, they are afraid. They are worried. They're 22, 23 years old, and they are extremely scared of what the future is going to bring. And that is a huge indictment against policymaking over the past 25 years, where essentially the establishment managing data, managing the economy, managing society, have completely failed in providing a sense of future perspective and hope and utopia that we can all work towards, and to have a positive energy going through society that where we all believe that if we do our best, things are going to get better in the next 10, 20 years. Right now, nobody seems to feel that things are going to get better.
And then all the establishment basically tells you, and this is one of those things that I was very upset about yesterday. So the result of the establishment, particularly of the center-left and left-leaning parties in Europe, was, oh, this is so terrible. People are voting for the extreme right. We need to protect democracy. And right, the leader of the German Social Democratic Party even called the right wing and people who vote for the right wing, they call them Nazis, right? Something that in Germany you do not, that's a word you don't use lightly. And you have such an escalation in the rhetoric of the left towards the right, and also the center, right? Saying, oh, we need to protect ourselves from them. Yeah, guys, I mean, I'm so sorry, but that only works for so long, right? I've now protected democracy for the last 5 years, but democracy is not really working for me anymore.
No, and it's even, I would say here, the, if you like, the mainstream right-wing parties that essentially do the same. They basically are saying, we have maybe some things in common with the extreme right, but we are decent, normal beings. We are the reasonable ones. And those extreme populist ones are unreasonable. And maybe they don't use the language that, if you like, left-wing politicians use. But essentially, you've got this core group of traditional establishment parties and political movements, mainstream media, that all are focused on the symptom, namely people voting in a way that they feel is abhorrent, that they feel is repulsive, without actually looking at the disease underlying that. And the disease is very much related to their own behavior. So then you get, over the past 10 years, and I've been frustrated by that for a decade now, this obsession with making fun of Donald Trump's voters. This obsession of making fun of those who vote for the populist right. Not just making fun of Donald Trump, which is also a little bit of a iffy premise if you want to take things seriously, but going into small town USA and basically interviewing people and make them look dumb. And that is exactly this establishment that doesn't understand that they're actually throwing oil on the flames, right? They are basically making people not just struggle every day, because that's what they're doing, but they also make them feel emotionally abused by the establishment. They make them feel denigrated. They make them feel small. And as a result, the moment the establishment casts them out, casts Trump voters out, or Meloni voters, or Le Pen voters out, that's the moment that Le Pen and Meloni and Trump will flourish, because they will get more and more people on their side.
There is an incredible arrogance within the establishment towards voters, because I don't want to say voters on the right, because voters who vote right and right populist, because there's a difference. I mean, these are people who traditionally vote left, I would say, because they're concerned about social welfare and maybe support raising the minimum wage and so on and so forth. But they've been horribly disappointed by left-leaning parties in the last 20 years. And then the kind of right the reaction or the reaction or the thought is always like, they're a little bit dumb, right? As we just saw in this Stephen Colbert interview, right? They're a little bit dumb, as you just explained.
Or they're racist or they're sexist or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. They're all the isms and so on. And here yesterday, and this is, I love election days because you always, there's a big fuss, there's a lot of data being thrown around and there's a lot of polls. And there was one that stood out to me, at least here in Germany and for Germany, right? Where they asked the average voter, oh, why do you think that people vote for the Alternative for Germany, for the right populist party? And I think 2/3 or a bit more said, oh, because they want to basically tell off the establishment. They want to tell them, oh, you know what? You've really messed up here. They're not actually voting for them because they're convinced by what they're saying. Well, and then they asked the same question to people who vote for the Alternative for Germany, and there 3/4, 75% of them said, no, we're actually convinced by this. This is no longer just a whack on the finger of the establishment, but we're convinced by this because, I mean, well, I don't know. it might be useful to go out and talk to them.
Yeah, I mean, there is, of course, some inherent bias in these polls, right? Because at the moment you vote for a party, you don't want to say, hey, I just vote against the other party. No, that makes you look a little bit superficial and all that. So you say, no, I believe in this. But the thing that is... So there might be an interesting comparison here with homeopathy. Hear me out here. So homeopathy, often people... Homeopathic doctors, I don't know if doctors are right, practitioners is probably a better word. They often get enormously high scores for actually listening to the patients, for being kind, for having a nice conversation, by acknowledging the patient's problem. Oh, you have a headache? Oh, I'm so sorry. Let's talk about it. How long have you had it? How does it affect you? Whereas if you go to a real doctor, like a scientific doctor, the only doctor that should really exist, they are overloaded with work. They're impatient. They do not take you seriously. And as a result, a surprising amount of people buy homeopathic products, even though they are clearly not scientifically proven. They do not have the impact that people believe they do. It might be a placebo effect, but homeopathy is not scientifically proven or based. In fact, quite the opposite. We've shown that we know that it doesn't work. Now, why do so many people go for homeopathy? Because people want to feel recognized. They want to feel heard. And then they really connect with that practitioner. They say, oh, they really understand me. They stand for what I'm going through. They're going to help me. And I think that is exactly what's happening with populist parties, especially right-wing populists, is that their policies are generally, I would argue, terrible. You know, we shouldn't vote for extreme right-wing parties because they are going to destroy a lot of the good things that we have in our society, but people feel heard, and as a result, heard as in they listen to, they feel that they are, that the extreme right-wing parties connect with them, that they also understand the problems that they face, etc., etc., and therefore they generally start believing in that movement. And that is extremely troubling. And if you go back to the homeopathy analogy, then the problem there is not necessarily the existence of homeopathic quacks, because that's what they are. The problem is that doctors, real doctors, scientifically based doctors, are not fulfilling their duties. They're not fulfilling their role sufficiently. They're not listening to patients. They're not helping patients go through the process. And that's the same here with the political establishment, right? The political establishment is not connecting to voters. They are not listening to voters. They are mocking voters. They are acting as if voters are idiots. And that is the worst thing you can do.
In my early years of a social science student, I don't know, I was still hopeful about the world, right? Not as a now. I compared the election results of right-wing populist parties as basically an alarm bell, right? So that as soon as the right-wing populist parties go above 5%, then there should be an alarm bell going off for the establishment. Ooh, we really need to adjust what we're doing here because people are starting to be unhappy about this. I don't know why nobody was listening to me, but it seems like these alarm bells have now been ignored for at least 10 years. And things are getting worse. And I think that's the same applies to homeopathy, right? If you see that more and more people are going to these quacks, then maybe you as a doctor should be concerned and thinking that, hold on a second, why are people going there? Do I maybe need to change my own behavior instead of calling people who go to the quacks idiots who don't believe in science?
Exactly right. That's exactly it. And now with homeopathy, you could still argue, given that it's mostly water, it's kind of harmless. It's you can drink as much of it as you like and it's not going to do anything. With extreme right-wing politics, it is actually very destructive. It's very damaging, and it leads to very, very serious consequences. And here there is this other element that people often seem to feel too comfortable with. Namely, people seem to believe that as long as you're in the middle, as long as you're the middle ground, you're center, you're in between the extremes, then you're the reasonable one. Then you're the rational one. Then you take the high ground because you understand that life is complex and you have to therefore not go to the extremes. But a number of the problems that our societies are facing, and especially the lack of vision that our societies face at the moment, require radical solutions, not extreme right-wing radical solutions, but they require a radical discourse. People are not idiots. People do understand that we're not heading towards a brighter tomorrow at the moment. They know that the future is worrisome. And as a result, they need radical discourse from the establishment, not moderation, not managerial nothingness. They need a clear vision, not one that is necessarily populist, not one that is necessarily extremist, but one that is radical in the sense of saying, this is where I want to go with our country. Are you with me? And instead, the establishment is just lingering in this middle ground, this no man's land, without any vision or any real sense of purpose, except being reasonable against the populists.
Yeah, I mean, they're yelling at them, calling them words, or they're calling for snap elections, as Macron did in France, and not really doing anything. Yeah, there is a clear lack of vision here. I don't know what.
And lack of interest in being radical, right? Lack of interest in actually working hard to provide something new. Just way too comfortable with the way things have been going.
What's the international relations context?
So let's take this out from the West and basically to a greater perspective, to a global perspective. I mean, the result of these European elections are basically that, Europe as a geopolitical player is weakened. Because now, right, von der Leyen now first has to balance who is she getting voted by, right? Will the Social Democrats help her out? Will the Greens help her out? Or does she rely on the right? Kind of further paralyzing the European Union. So the EU is weakened on the global stage.
Well, certainly the self-image of the EU, right? So essentially the idea of the EU as a beacon of hope for the rest of the world is clearly weakened. At a practical level, probably a lot of governments around the world don't really care. In fact, they might actually believe that they can do business with the Melonis and Le Pens of this world. Yes, they will be more nationalistic, but it will be clearer. It's always been difficult to deal with the Europeans if you're an outsider, because the Europeans come with this enormous baggage of moral convictions when it comes to democracy, when it comes to liberalism, etc., etc. And that always makes doing business with them complex. Just ask the Saudis, ask the Chinese. They've always had a problem with that. And therefore, now that there is more of a breaking of that self-image in Europe, and basically the lack of a conviction when it comes to their moral foundations, that could actually be good news for the rest of the world. But what it does mean is that Europe as a source of ideology is minimized. You know, I don't think any country around the world looks at the European Union or looks at European countries individually and says, hey, you know what, I want to be like them. No, that doesn't happen anymore. People are now around the world doing their own thing, and they will try to do business with Europeans, but they're certainly not looking up at Europeans in any way, despite the Western bubble being strong and Europeans still believing that that image is still there.
Well, I think the world looks at the EU now strictly through that business perspective, as you said. And I think they still want to be like the EU when it comes to the single market and in unified regulations. But I'm not so sure whether the rest of the world looks at the EU and says, oh, look, what a well-functioning government system. You know, they really seem to be getting along here and they seem to be getting a lot of things done.
It's very obviously a society that is decaying at the moment, right? And so the rest of the world probably is quite happy about that, because they feel that makes it easier, that takes down barriers, that takes down a bit of arrogance probably. And, you know, even someone like Trump, the problem for the rest of the world working with President Trump was that President Trump was volatile. He went from one place to the other. He was less predictable than Biden or Obama, and that's a problem. But at the same time, the lack of ideology by Trump meant that they could actually just talk to Trump and the Trump administration and say, hey, what kind of business can we do today with you? And I think that's what they're hoping for with Europe as well now, that they're hoping for European leaders that come from this populist right-wing movement to be much more pragmatic in the way that they do business with China or with Russia or with someone else.
See, you said that some of these international countries or international players are looking forward to the EU being a bit more divided and no longer basically speaking with one voice. And I recall that this was a big theme during the campaigning for the European elections. And as always, right, is that, Putin with his fake news, they want to divide us because that's good for the evil players of this world. That again screams Western bubble, right? It's, everyone else wants us to fail because we are doing so great.
Yeah, first of all, the power, the influence that people like Putin have over elections is way exaggerated, right? The idea that somehow there's an army of Russian influencers basically swinging the votes towards the radical extreme right is of course, a bit of nonsense. Essentially, what's happening to Europe and what's happening to North America is caused by internal dynamics, not by outsiders. Now, does Putin prefer people like Trump in Europe as well? Sure, I guess so. I think that makes life a lot easier. Putin also seems to be comfortable. I keep on saying Trump and Putin as the same, but Putin also seems comfortable with a anti-Trump, namely Angela Merkel. So I think that we're exaggerating the interest that the Russians and the Chinese actually have in internal politics. What they care more about is how likely is it that I can just do business with them, or how much are they going to be on their high horse? And the extreme right that has won the elections yesterday is not going to be particularly high on their horse when they deal with Moscow or when they deal with Beijing. So sure, that's good news for them, but not more than that. You know, it is just a practical observation, nothing else.
Well, I mean, they haven't entirely won the elections, right? I mean, the conservatives, like the center is still by far the strongest force, but the far right did win in that sense, where they kind of gained the most seats.
Sure, and there's something else going on there though, that the traditional right has moved accordingly, right? So the extreme right is doing well in the election, and they've won in the sense that they feel like the winners, let me put it like that. But the traditional mainstream right has also moved along with them. And as a result, politics nowadays in Europe is generally, on all sides of the spectrum, much more right-wing than it used to be 20, 30 years ago. European society has become significantly more right-wing. Now, what does right-wing mean? Well, it means reactionary. It means not having a, you know, wanting to conserve what's there, not having the feeling, the need to radically alter society for a utopian cause. And as a result, you know, the mainstream right-wing parties in the long run will always lose out against this, because people do need a alternative. They do need a vision. And by trying to mildly, conservatively copy the extreme right, I think mainstream right-wing parties in the long run are just not going to be sustainable, even if right now they're still the biggest bloc in the parliament.
And can you explain to our listeners what is the problem?
So all of this is very exemplary of something that we've been talking about for quite some time now. It's that overall decay in the West. Is that Western societies are decaying and the Western bubble is as strong as ever, but the Western bubble is decaying in that sense as well.
Yeah, and it will continue decaying, and people will become more and more uncomfortable and therefore go to the more and more extreme sides of the political spectrum, as long as there are no politicians who actually, or parties that actually have a radical vision of what our society could look like in a good, positive way, rather than trying to defend what we have and fight against evil outsiders, whether it's Putin or Xi Jinping, or whether it is the immigrants coming in, or the refugee, or the asylum seeker. As long as there is no alternative discourse to that, where people on the left or in the center or wherever they are supposed to come from say, this is where I want to take our society, this is the kind of country that I want to create, decay will continue to happen. And everyone is just sleepwalking into the hands of right-wing extremists that are actually going to at some point make us wake up one morning in Europe and no longer see liberal democracy that once existed in the 20th century.
Well, because this is a... Right, so I'm not sure whether this is part of the damage. Let's explore whether it actually is, because... So my reaction to the establishment, but also the left, the center left, and so on and so forth, trying to avoid a growing right populist group to gain power, right? So they're trying with all means possible, right? By building ridiculous coalitions, with a bunch of parties, just to make sure that the right wing populists are not getting power. To me, that kind of creates an anti-reaction where I say, wait, hang on a little bit, that's a bit anti-democratic, right? Whoever wins the election has the mandate to basically rule the country. And what's the worst that could happen? I mean, ultimately, that is liberal democracy, right? Let me be provocative here, is that if people vote for the extreme right, then the extreme right should also rule. I mean, what's the worst that can happen?
Yeah, no, so that's exactly what should happen. And there are negative consequences to that, to the extreme right wing. Like I said, it's not like homeopathy, it's not neutral. Extreme right wing policies are, in the long term, destructive for society. But it is absolutely how the system is supposed to work. And what happens if the establishment or the left try to outplay the voters tactically is that they make things worse in the long term, because more and more voters will feel unheard, they will feel not listened to, and they will turn more to those radical parties because they feel the establishment is conspiring against them, which in some ways it is, right? Not conspiring in the way of having a meeting and say, how can we screw over voters? But the mainstream media, mainstream politicians are absolutely conspiring in the sense of desperately through tricks and through empty discourse trying to stop the extreme right. Because they don't have a real answer. They don't have a content-driven answer. The content-driven answer would require that vision, would require radical policies. But they're afraid to do that. They probably don't have the intellectual capacity anymore to do that. I think political parties have become less intellectual over the past 25 years. And so they are just reacting tactically. And by reacting tactically, they're making it much less likely that they will regain the upper hand in this fight. And over time, slowly, the country will decline into that right-wing populist narrative until, like I said, one day we're going to wake up and things are going to look very, very different from what we once dreamed about.
Well, that's exactly the thing, right? I mean, because yes, it's the rightful democratic process to basically let the majority or the party with the mandate lead. And I asked, what's the worst thing that could happen? Well, I mean, we in Europe have seen what the worst thing is that could happen, right? I mean, that would be fascism. And you already said it, is that by kind of people voting more and more right, then the right-wing extreme needs to move further to the right to still polarize enough to gain those votes. And over time, society is going to move further into that direction. And moving into either way of the extremes is always very problematic.
Yes, and it seems that these parties that are in theory capable of providing an alternative are too much navel staring, right? They're too much looking at themselves. They're too much inward looking, playing games internally within their own party and towards other parties, rather than having deep intellectual conversations, rather than being brave. They're kind of too scared to be brave, right? Because they're scared that if they say something that may somehow sound too far away from those successful populist right-wing parties, then they're going to be punished. Whereas I think that voters at some point will actually appreciate that. They will appreciate someone standing for something, like Bernie Sanders in the United States. Now, for European standards, Bernie Sanders is relatively moderate. But from an American perspective, Bernie Sanders was very radical. Nationalizing healthcare, public healthcare, taxing the uber-wealthy, etc., etc. And he got rewarded by that, without a establishment party to back him up. That kind of thing needs to happen in Europe as well. And as long as it doesn't happen, there will be this continuous decline.
And what now?
Exactly right. I mean, that's what's going to happen in the future, is that there will be a continuous decline. Or do we have any hope that this might look differently?
No, so, I mean, very little. There must always be hope. We must always be positive. And also, otherwise, our listeners are going to argue that we're just pessimist, negative nannies that don't offer any alternatives. But the hope is that at some point, sort of, the establishment will hit rock bottom. And then we'll have a deep, deep rethink about who they are and what they want to do. And they will analyze their behavior over the past 5 years when it came to the energy crisis, when it came to COVID, when it came to just general inflation, when it comes to the cost of living crisis that so many people are facing nowadays, when it comes to the feeling of not being listened to, not being heard. And there will be some kind of cleansing within alternative parties to actually have a proper discourse, a proper vision of a utopian future, right? And something to work towards. Not that you will ever reach utopia, but something to be hopeful about. That is what we need to cling on to. We need something like that to happen. But the establishment probably hasn't hit rock bottom. And in that sense, it's almost a shame that the radical right hasn't won even more, right? That you know, that right now the establishment, just like you referred to before, can say, well, we're still the biggest party in parliament. Yay for us, so we don't have too much to worry about. No, you have a lot to worry about because you're at the moment being completely useless to the populations you're supposed to represent.
Mm. Well, I mean, you already addressed the listeners, and we promised last week, and we will continue to promise, that with our last episode of basically our fourth season, so that will be approximately in the middle of July, we will have an entire episode devoted to solutions. We will save the West. I'm not going to make these big statements here, but that's basically the plan for one of these episodes in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't made a list of our solutions yet internally, so we're now putting a lot of pressure on our shoulders to actually come up with something. But I would argue, though, that it is good that we're going to do that. It is good that we have one or two episodes where we look at solutions. Those solutions are going to be perfect, because otherwise we would be much more famous than we are, and we would be much more successful than we are. But there is also true value in just critically analyzing, right? It's not necessarily the case that whenever you criticize without coming up with a solution, your criticism is pointless. No. This conversation about what's going wrong with the establishment, what's going wrong with policymaking in our Western societies, is a really important conversation to have. And before you can actually identify the solutions is when you have to really know what the underlying problem is. And it seems that the establishment right now has no significant critical analysis internally. And that's why it has to come from the outside, from us.
This seems like a great moment to end today's conversation on the 2024 European Parliament election. If you have any questions, comments, or you've heard a mistake that we've made throughout the episode, please make sure to send us an email to thewesternbubble@gmail.com and we will try to incorporate them in our following episodes. Thank you very much to the listeners for joining us today. Make sure to join us again next week when we burst the Western Bubble. That is it from my side, Balder. Which closing quote did you pick for us today?
I have a quote from Robert M. Hutchins, who was a US academic and philosopher. And he said, "The death of democracy is not likely to be an assassination from ambush. It will be a slow extinction from apathy, indifference, and undernourishment."